Talk given Sunday, 18th July, 1976. You all know that the culmination of the religious life is a state of supreme communion. And it has been expressed in different ways in different parts of the world. In the theistic religions, it is presented as the unio mystica, the mystical union. And in India, the East generally, which accepts both theistic and trans-theistic teachings regarding ultimate reality, it has been expressed by the Sanskrit word samadhi, by that other word which is used specially in Japanese Buddhism, Zen, Satori, and so forth. And people have all kinds of conceptions about what the Unio Mystica is, or what this Supreme Communion, or Samadhi, or Satori is. And all these conceptions are attempts to suggest something which altogether defies conceptualizing and verbal formulation. Simply because the Supreme Communion is a state of being and awareness which utterly transcends all finitude. All thoughts, all expressions of any type whatsoever, whether they be in terms of painting or music or poetry or words or anything at all, they are all particular, finite, limited. How will you try to cram the infinite into the mold of the finite? It is totally impossible. What is more, a point which is hardly ever touched upon, or has been touched upon through the centuries, is just this: that we human beings, as we are, can never escape the constricting effect of the nature of our awareness of existence, namely the fact of our existing, living, functioning, perceiving, realizing, always in terms of space-time. But in the Unio Mystica, in that supreme communion, the mystery has become the manifest miracle. The individual being, although limited and finite, is the instrument through which the total transcending of the finite by a finite being is made manifest. How shall we think about this, imagine this, talk about this? We can't. We can only say it is not this, not this, not this, not anything that we here in our mode of awareness can talk about. And yet, if one has ever been touched by transcendence and has been through some sort of deep and true realization of transcendence and is not self-deceived through his egoism or vanity, he knows that transcendence is that reality which, although infinite, immeasurable, immortal, completely subsumes all that is finite, mortal, and measurable. It completely subsumes it. This is the magic, if you like, the mystery, the beyond human understanding and perception of the creative activity of whatever this ultimate reality, which is the supreme creative power, as it functions in terms of creation. But there are certain things, certain states of the human, certain realizations which can suggest, which can characterize the condition of the finite individual when he is in that state where the separation, the veils between him and transcendence have all disappeared. And he is the living vehicle through which the light of transcendence shines utterly unhindered. Undarkened. First and foremost, the individual is in a state of attentiveness which is total, complete, and intense. I use the word attentiveness. I am deliberately not using the word consciousness. We may use the word awareness, which, generally speaking, in the dictionary is regarded as something vaguer than consciousness. But awareness, because of that vagueness, is less limiting, therefore, than consciousness. And also, the word, whilst the word consciousness always implies the conscious subject who is separate from the object of which he is conscious, the word awareness may imply the person, the subject, who is aware, but certainly need not necessarily imply a separate other object. You see, you and I, as we are never conscious in terms which totally exclude otherness. within the field of consciousness. It is, one is always conscious of the other, however big, however small, however somewhat slightly miscalled transcendent it may be. It's always in terms of the distinction between subject and object, between man the creature and God the creator. This is where all theistic religions necessarily have to stop short, because they define God as the wholly other than. Regarding that wholly other than, however sublimely they present it, and they do present it wonderfully sublimely, however much that other than is something which includes us, but there is that element which remains apart. So that where the theistic realization, which is the supreme realization from the theistic follower is concerned, reaches a certain pitch of unification. It never completely eliminates this other than. Whereas in actual fact, in the actual reality, as experienced both by theist and he who does not accept the idea of God as a separate entity, in both cases, the actual experiencing is one and the same. The separate self, the individual, represented by the word me, with its particular characteristics, its particular qualities, that which distinguishes it, separates it out from the world, is completely lost. There is no separation. And yet that living being, the separate individual, is there. But he is in that state of attentiveness, which is this transcendent, all-inclusive, total awareness. But what are the implications of this kind of attentiveness? See, attentiveness is something which we can actually practice. We do exercise attentiveness all through the day. We do attend to what catches our interest or what needs to be done. We have to attend to it. The mind may wander now and again, may wander a great deal. But whenever the mind wanders, what has happened is that the attention has been diverted to something else. But attentiveness is functioning. This is the important point. Now, our attentiveness functions in terms of the finite and the particular, the separate. Arbitrarily, because of our faculty of speech and this special capacity of our intellect to do so, we postulate a unity, a wholeness. All life is one. We use the word universe, the unity of the universe. It's a one thing. We say the words of which we are quite unaware. We are not experiencing the unity of the universe. Not only are we not experiencing the unity of the universe totally and completely all the time, not only that, but we regard this unity in terms which belong to the state of non-unity. All our categories, all our descriptions, all our analytical processes and presentations all belong to the realm which is not the one totality which completely subsumes the multitudinous variety. You see? These are the difficulties. What makes us produce these sort of ideas and conceptions and say, ah, this is the ultimate reality, this is the final unity of the universe? There are several factors involved there. It is our greed, first and foremost, strange as it may sound. We want to possess the unity. We want to possess God. We want to enter the kingdom of heaven. I want it. But is this not greed? Is this not possessiveness? And can one associate greed with transcendence? And there are other factors. Is it not egoism of the supreme sort? This is a case where the I has been blown up in imagination to the size of the universe. By self-identification. If the person who says, and one often hears people say these things, and they say it so gently and condescendingly, you know, I have spoken to God, I know God, as if I know the Prime Minister or Her Majesty the Queen and had tea with her on Thursday afternoon. They speak in that strain. Now, this is ignorance plus egoism, vanity and all the rest of it. He who has been touched by transcendence knows one thing. Above all other things, that he does not know. The Unio Mystica, the transcendence, the complete unity, this state of total, complete, intense attentiveness cannot be put into the field of knowledge. Knowledge as we ordinarily define knowledge. Knowledge consists of the acquisition of mental pictures, mental constructs, of facts and figures, of everything which is limited and particular. You see? Knowledge consists of that. But if and when this multitudinous variety does become totally integrated into that light of awareness, which is one only, if this happens, then this is not knowing the totality, but being the totality. In mind and consciousness, in mind and awareness. That is why, in one of the most remarkable presentations of this sort of thing through the scriptures of the world, is the statement that Brahman, the ultimate reality as the Upanishads present it, is being, awareness, bliss. But bliss which is utterly peaceful. Bliss which has no touch, no, not the slightest tremor of pleasure in it. We have no words in the language to express this thing which is called ananda. It is an utter peace. But note carefully, being, awareness, chit, attentiveness. That's what that awareness stands for. It's usually translated consciousness, which is really a bad word in this context. Sat, chit, ananda. Chit is attentiveness. It's complete, total, utter attentiveness. That is why you find that phrase in the sentence in the New Testament. Not a sparrow falleth to the ground, but my Father in heaven knoweth it. Of course, again, the words, they have a misleading element. But if you can sort of sense this state of total, complete attentiveness, you'll know what was implied by Jesus. So, in this state of attentiveness then, supposing you, yourself, are in that state, what is the outstanding characteristic of you, the person, the finite, limited person there who is in that state of unity? What we call the me, M-E-me, is completely absent. There are no characteristics which distinguish me as a separate person operating at all. Because any of my characteristics, whatsoever they may be, howsoever exalted or howsoever mean, they are obstructions to the actual being in that transcendent state. They are obstructions. There I am no longer a good man, a bad man, a saver of life or a murderer or anything at all. Absolutely nothing applies in that state. But this is the state of total and utter purity. And this is also the state which is implied in the word poverty. This is also the state of chastity, the utter immaculate condition. This is the state also of true obedience, perfect obedience. And whilst Christendom has mentioned poverty, chastity, obedience, and laid great emphasis, all the great scriptures have the same thing. What is this obedience? Not by one separate individual to the commands, the imposition of another, howsoever exalted or divine. The word obedience is derived from ob and audire, audire to hear. How do you hear? But by listening. And if you listen, you are attending. What is it that you hear? The question is a wrong question. There is no what. You are in the state of hearing, in the state of listening. This is the state of communion, of unity. This is the timeless conjugation because of which the entire universal process goes on. This is creative action in eternity. But when the ordinary mortal down here tries to speak of it, all the language that he uses, all the concepts that he presents will necessarily be subject to the limitations of space-time, of measurement, of finitude, of special separate significances.
So you see what the living of the religious life culminates in. The state in which the me, which is the source of ill, which is the source of division, therefore the source of sin, hatred, greed, resentment when greed is frustrated, hate, rebellion, anger when ego and vanity are hurt. All that is completely out. This transcendent purity is indescribable. What is this purity? It's not what I call good or lovely or beautiful, nor is it the opposite of what I call good or lovely or beautiful. And this is the fruition when which emerges, this transcendent fruition which emerges when attentiveness is total, complete and intense. Now you may think, but this is some far away, impossible for me to realize ideal. It is not an ideal. An ideal is a limited thing. It's a thing which is described, which my mind projects. And how can my imperfect little mind project the infinite, the immeasurable? Whilst being alive here and now, if I die totally to the self, then immortality is manifest through the mortal self. How do I die totally to the immediate now, the self? By not grasping at anything. This is where the Buddha gave us something whose depth and sublimity and transcendent nature, where truth is concerned, has yet to be understood and realized by even the most devout Buddhist followers. When he said, Ananda, deathlessness is the absence of all grasping. Consider. When this thing here, is totally selfless, how can it grasp at all? What is it going to grasp? Because when it is selfless, there is no other to grasp. This, remember, is all in terms of awareness. The mind is so utterly purified that mind, which is the totality, this is just a convenient way of talking about the untalkable. Whatever word I use will be misleading, will be inadequate. But for convenience, this transcendent mind, which is the totality, you see, functions through this living organism. And my mind, my psyche, is now obliterated by being transmuted into the divine mind, the divine psyche, functioning through this brain and this body. So naturally again you may ask, how do I realize that state of grasp, non-grasping? All you can do is just what you would do if you were not to grasp this pencil. Let go. You tell that to the man in the world, however intelligent he may be, and he will say, but good gracious me, you're asking me to let go that which actually does represent me, characterizes me. You see how he's caught within this shell of egoism? Now this is something which we have to find out for ourselves. You are hungry. There is a table. There is a meal. But you can't ask anybody else to satisfy your hunger by eating on your behalf. Totally impossible. You can't ask another person to breathe in order that you may live. Your breathing is you in actual material reality. The exercise of your innate power of non-grasping is you, the finite, become the totality. It is in you. It is not from outside that you get it. You are the alone, the utterly alone. And in that absolute aloneness, everything which is tied up with the misery of loneliness, the feeling of separateness and left-outness because you cling to a separate ego, is utterly transcendent. In your complete aloneness, you are everything, everybody throughout the universe. Do you now have to cultivate love? To cultivate wisdom, to cultivate truth? Do you have to seek beauty, chase happiness? You know, here is a wonderful manifestation of the inadequacy of language. I'll use the word poverty in the ordinary sense, the dictionary sense, the poverty of language. We use words like truth, wisdom, goodness, beauty, bliss, and so forth, which we know something about only within the sphere of ambivalence. Love, hate, wisdom, folly, and so forth. But we have no other words to express that which completely transcends and subsumes all this. Now, if you don't grasp, if you practice non-grasping, don't say, oh, but that is me. That is what distinguishes me. I've got to preserve an image before the public, otherwise I'll lose my job. Well, all right, keep your job and keep out of the kingdom of heaven. You can't have it both ways. There are two ways in that case, because you yourself have made two ways. Whereas in actuality there is only one way. If one lets go the whole of the me, you observe it, you're attentive to all the manifestations of the me, every one of them, attend to them, Do not fight against them. Do not try to overcome evil. That is the surest way of strengthening evil. Do not try to cultivate the good, because you can cultivate that which of which you already have a concept. And a concept is always something which limits to reality. Let go of the concept and a profounder insight will emerge. And when you've had some brilliant insight, don't say, ah, I've got it, I've seen the truth. No, the truth is trying to enter into me. And my saying, I've seen the truth, is the block which obstructs the light of truth. Be open, let go, because when I say I have seen the truth, I have immediately a clear conceptual formulation of it, a clear concept. And I believe that the clarity of concept is identical with the light of transcendence. It isn't. It is the darkness by the light of the transcendence. So you see, when somehow these things sort of strike you, they will come to you naturally, they will come to you spontaneously in their purity, their incredible loving kindness and beauty. If you just let them come, don't seek, don't grasp, just pay attention to the immediate now, whatever that immediate now may seem to be. Because in that attentiveness, this immediate, the miracle takes place. The immediate now, whether it belongs to what is called good in the ambivalent sphere, or whether it belongs to evil in the ambivalent sphere, suddenly loses its finitude and becomes the infinite, in which there is no conflict of good and evil. You have gone beyond all good and evil, that is, beyond the human concepts of good and evil, and you actually experience that total good. Then you will know the meaning of why callest thou me good? There is only one that is good. And that is the unknown, the unknowable, the transcendent, the beyond space-time, the creative action in eternity. Words, words. But what can I do but use words? The creative action in eternity, because of which this multitudinous variety comes into being. Why do I talk about these things which seem impossible to achieve? Impossible to realize, achieve is a bad word. It is only the impossible to realize, what seems the impossible to realize, which is worthwhile realizing, and which is the most easily realized thing if you let it flow into you. I never reach the transcendent. I never attain nirvana, the kingdom of heaven, or holiness or perfection at all. But it is the transcendent which manifests all these wonderful things through this, if I am quiet, non-grasping, attentive, peaceful, burning away intensely all the time. Look at your physical life itself. From the moment you are conceived, there is a process of burning away. Oxygen is necessary. Oxygenation takes place continuously in the life process. What is oxygenation but a burning away? But you're not all aflame, and there's no need to call a fire engine. This burning away is one of the great marvels and mysteries. Fire. Now you understand the mystery of fire, or at least I hope you just get a sort of a feel of it. Why fire is such, is in the case of Zarathustrian teaching, the supreme symbol. And in the Kabbalah too, the fire, and in Judaism, fire is a very, very important symbol. In Hindu ritual too. In fact, in all the rituals of the world and so on, the so-called elements are very important symbols. But fire, light, is a peculiarly important symbol. So this burning away takes place. But this burning away is what? Not a destroying process. It's a living process. The living process is a burning away. As I breathe in, take in oxygen. And to give the crudest, the most concrete example of it, is burning away taking place. So let the whole mind catch a light. And you will find that through you yourself, who are a matrix of cosmos chaos, through you yourself, in the process of that burning away, the light of transcendence will shine through and be a benediction upon mankind. But the supreme secret lies with our supreme instrument of salvation, attentiveness. Forget all the littleness and the pettiness with which minds which rather cling to their self-esteem say, but all this sounds very negative, we want something positive. That is said by him who is still quite blind. There is nothing positive, nothing negative in the ultimate reality that is possible for man to realize. All these words are absurd words. See, he wants something positive. He doesn't want the negative. But if the universe consists of both positive and negative elements, and if I say I don't want the negative, I'm denying the universe, I'm denying God's activity, I'm denying the creative power of the world, which works through the instrumentality of the harmonious interaction, this timeless conjugation of the positive and the negative, the male and the female. It's important to spare no pains in getting a sense of transcendence. Get the thrill of it. Don't seek it. Just be open to it. Be expectant. Be expectant. It's a state of divine fear. Now be very careful. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, as theistic religions put it. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Well, what is this fear? This state of apprehensiveness. My goodness. The transcendent itself the totality, the immeasurable, the ultimate things going to happen, the state of apprehensiveness. And yet, it is not the fear which is cowardice which will make you turn tail and fly. It is that kind of apprehensiveness which is the indescribable thrill of love approaching consummative union. That is what that fear of the Lord is. And in that fear, the triumph of love means the wiping out of each and every fear concerning the separate self, the ununited self, the self ununited with the totality. See the consequences of such attentiveness? How can you hate anything then? When you hear news, the IRA did this, senseless murders, Lebanon, here, there, everywhere, the horrible, terrible things that are done by man, horrible and terrible in our ambivalent, limited context. Of course, they are ill, they are evil, in actual fact, because they are obstructions to the fruition of man, the transcendent fruition of man. But if you have been touched by transcendence, you cannot hate the evildoer and take sides with the sufferer. This is one of the sorest trials we have to go through in life. Why, if you want a logical, intellectual reason, why one why experiencing resentment, antagonism towards the oppressor, the evildoer, why it shouldn't be there? It's just this. Healing comes from a transcendent depth. If I am antagonistic to something, take sides with this against that, that transcendent depth is blocked from working. That transcendent power never compels. You've heard me say this 100 times if you've heard me say it once. Transcendence never compels. It just lets everything come to ultimate fruition. People have wars, then they sit round a table afterwards. And they have done this ad nauseam repeatedly for tens of thousands of years. Sticking within the sphere of ambivalence, within the sphere of you and I, your interests and my interests. Now let us make a nice little compromise, right until the next war bursts out. But if there is no me, have I an enemy? He has no me to fight against. He has no me to fight against him. Non-grasping. Complete giving up of all egoism, of all vanity, of all isolative self-consciousness, of all self-evaluation, self-esteem, and therefore also of evaluation of everybody else. Oh, he's such a nice person. That fellow is not bad, but, you know. Well, in this kind of immature, childish, backward, subhuman state, how can there be anything like order, harmony, humanity? Subhumanity, yes, but humanity, no. Attentiveness is the magic portion. Non-grasping. Don't say, I will attend to this, to the transcendent. I'll pay great attention to what Feroz Mehta has said, and I won't listen to so-and-so. No, listen. Just listen to the universe. And in that unselfed listening, you are constantly growing. See that lovely phrase, underneath are the everlasting arms. They are not just for you and you and you, and not for him and him and him, because he's a bad chap. Then they wouldn't be everlasting arms. Underneath are the everlasting arms. And they are not underneath, they are everywhere. They uphold, they sustain, they bring forth, they nourish. Uncomplainingly they take us errant children of mortality back to the bosom of the infinite. Have we learned something of the art, the meaning of love? Non-grasping, non-possessive, non-demanding. And then the horrible things of the world, the horrible people, as we say, of the world, the people who do evil unquestionably. Now, you, I, can be an influence for transformation of the ill into the well. See the implication of religion. It goes utterly beyond all philosophy, science, so-called practical measures, putrid rubbish produced by an ignorant, grasping, groveling lot of subhuman beings. I'm not saying this in derogation. They are me, I am them. Who am I to say anything or point the finger of accusation at anybody? Oh. But these things must be seen. They must be seen with an intensity which remains permanently in one's whole state of attentiveness. And thereby you fulfill in one great aspect at least your destiny and the purpose of your existence in this world.